With the cases of COVID rising in Japan, I was curious as to what the procedure is like for anyone who gets the virus in Japan. I invited a friend of mine to come on and share his recent experience of dealing with the Japanese healthcare system. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe, and I'm actually coming to you from my place in Canada right now. So let me give you an update on everything that has happened since the last time I recorded this show. So I think I might have mentioned it, or maybe I haven't mentioned it, I can't remember. But anyways, originally I came to Japan to help this travel startup get off the ground. And we launched the travel startup, and basically COVID came along and said, damn it to you, there's going to be no more tourists coming into Japan. So the travel startup pretty much folded. The company kind of ran out of money, put everything on hold, and they're just basically waiting to see if and when the government allows tourists to come back to Japan again. That was back in March or April, I can't remember. And I actually had some work to do, so I kind of decided to stay in Japan for a couple of months. My original plan was to head back to Canada in May. And so I was like, okay, I'll just hang out in Japan for a couple of months, eat some karage, enjoy the Japanese food, raid the konbini, raid the vending machines, and go back in May. And then what happened is the Canadian government said, nope, that ain't going to happen. They shut the border in May, and Air Canada stopped flying all flights between Canada and Japan. So basically, I was kind of stuck in Japan, which kind of sucked because I wasn't obviously making any money from this company. So I was like, well, I don't want to be stuck here too long. I don't want to go back to teaching English. but luckily for me, I have a bit of client work online, so I was able to work a bit in Japan. And then the earliest I was able to get a flight was in July. So basically, I kind of hung out in Japan until July. And at the end of July, I flew back to Canada, which was about a week or so ago. And arriving in Canada, we have this quarantine thing we got to do. So basically, for the next 2 weeks, I have to stay in my room, in my house, and not leave my house. And yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing now for the past week or so. I've been here for about a week. I've been stuck in my place. It's really annoying because the weather in Canada is really nice. And I really want to go outside, but obviously I can't. And so I've basically just been hanging out in my room and getting stuff organized. I was gone longer than I originally planned. I was supposed to come back back in the spring. And here it is almost midsummer. So I have a lot to kind of catch up on, a lot to do. But getting a little bit stir crazy, just sitting in my house, staring at all this, gorgeous weather that we have outside. If you've ever been to Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada, you know what I'm talking about, because the island is absolutely fantastic. It's surrounded by ocean. It's just really great scenery and nature all around. The weather is perfect. On average, about like 22 to 25 degrees right now, and it's just absolutely perfect weather. And for those of you who are in Japan right now, I feel sorry for you, because like as soon as I left, the blast furnace got turned on. It's like 35 degrees with like 10,000% humidity in Japan right now, so you guys are not too happy. But I'm over here in Japan, well, kind of enjoying the nice weather from the view out my window. So basically, yeah, that's what happened. I'm stuck in my room for another week or so, and then I'm going to be in Japan I'm going to be in Canada for the foreseeable future until the markets in Japan open up again, and then I might head back to Japan. But in the meantime, I'll still do a few more podcasts because I do have a few more guests lined up. And I thought this show would be particularly relevant to the current situation is that a few days ago, actually, I saw a friend of mine posted on Facebook that he had contacted the COVID virus and had gone through the whole procedure in Japan. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, you want to come talk about it on my show? Because I thought that would be kind of a good to hear what it's like for someone to get COVID and go through, the hospitalization, everything in Japan. Because, the COVID is in the news, like all over the place, right? And we keep hearing it's crazy numbers, a second wave, millions of people wear masks, don't wear masks, and all this crazy stuff. People are dying, and all this. But I didn't ever hear anything about what is it like when you get it, and what do you do? Who do you call? What happens? I'm such a detail oriented guy. I want to know what the details are. I want to know what the procedures are. So I asked my friend to come on the show and give us his take on what his experience was like with dealing with COVID in Japan.
Right. So, It all started one night. So I had just gone out with for a dinner, and then when I got home, I was feeling like really sluggish, and that's when I realized like I was running a fever. But in the beginning, I didn't think much of it because it didn't feel like COVID. It just felt like a cold or a flu. And so I decided to just, okay, I'll just sleep it off and I'll see what happens. But for me, usually, like when I have a cold, I usually get better the next day. And the next day, I didn't feel better. So I thought that it might be something worse. But I never really thought that it would be coronavirus until on the third day, I received a message from one of my friends who I had been in contact the week prior, and he said that he had contracted coronavirus. And my first reaction was, damn, I probably have it too. When I received that message, my first instinct was to find out how to get tested. And the whole process was kind of tough to get around it because I would say because we're in Japan, getting tested for coronavirus is catered towards Japanese people and not that much towards foreigners because, you know, they've shut off all the borders and they're not expecting many foreigners to be reporting, to be getting tested for coronavirus. So all the information was in Japanese, all the hotlines, there's barely any English support anywhere. So I had to consult quite a lot of people, made a lot of phone calls to find out how to get tested. So what the conclusion that I arrived at was to the first thing you have to do is to get a recommendation from the doctor to the government office, or otherwise known as the health center or Bokenjo. And so that's what I did. I had to find a clinic that was accepting possible COVID patients, and I had to go there and get a diagnosis from the doctor and a recommendation to get a PCR test. So that's what I did.
Are you in Tokyo?
Yes, I'm in Tokyo.
Okay, so, interesting. So the first thing you do is you have to find this clinic. I guess you just Google it and that's how you find it?
No, so you can't just Google clinic and go for it. So what I had to do was to call this service by the government office called Himawari to recommend patients to certain hospitals or certain clinics to get for the service that you need. For Japanese people, usually they have a family doctor, but I didn't have one, so I had to go through that service. And when I called that service, they would search their database as to who is accepting these patients, and according to your location, and they'll recommend you like the nearest one.
How was the service? Were they receptive to you when you called? Like you saying, hey, I got COVID. So were they like spring into action, know exactly what to do? Or were they kind of a little bit hesitant to deal with you?
I would say they were pretty receptive because the conversation was entirely in Japanese. So they do have English support. That particular service has English support, but I didn't use that. Yeah, but I would say that the response was pretty quick, and they knew exactly what to do the moment I said that I possibly had coronavirus, which I ended up having. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to hear then. That's kind of refreshing then to hear that at least it seems like they have a system in place on dealing with this.
Yeah, I'm quite glad that they do have a system in place because it would be pretty bad if there's no fast response with illnesses like that.
Yeah, no kidding, for sure. So you call this line and then they recommend a clinic and you have to go to the clinic?
Yeah, that's right. So when they recommended the clinic, the clinic was accepting possible COVID patients, but you have to call them in advance to make a sort of like a reservation for them to like prepare to accept a possible, contagious, infectious person.
Right.
So I had to call them and to tell them like, hey, I'm sick. I've probably have coronavirus. Can I come in? And they would make the arrangements and give me a time as to where I could come in. So for me, I was kind of lucky. I managed to get a reservation on the day itself, in the evening though. And I went there and the doctor gave me a diagnosis with my symptoms and said that he would recommend me to go for a PCR test, which I did eventually 2 days later.
What did so this all happened on the first day, right? You wake up that day, you feel like a headache, you have a fever. Did you have any other symptoms on the first day?
No, on the first day I had just a headache and a fever, which actually went on for 3 days.
Okay.
And this calls and me going to the clinic only happened on the
third day. Oh, okay, so this is after your friend contacted you and said that he had COVID, so that's why you kind of put the two together and then realized that you might have COVID.
Yeah, that's right.
So for the 3 days, were you going to work?
For the 3 days, the first day I had my symptoms was on a Friday, so thankfully I didn't have to work over the next 2 days. And right. On Monday evening, that's when I received the message. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you can see why the virus would spread so quickly, right? Because I can imagine people may not think they have COVID, feel like they're just cold. They go to work and they don't realize it and they're actually spreading it. So in your case, it's actually lucky that you had the weekend that you're kind of staying at home.
Yeah, that's right. And I would see why people don't immediately assume that they have COVID, because based on the guidelines to get tested in the first place, you have to have the symptoms for consecutive 3 days.
Right. And, okay. So so that's kind of ironic then. So it's like, you have to wait until you've got 3 days, but during the 3 days, you might have been spreading it without even realizing it.
Yeah, that's right. And the worst part is that you can be spreading it even without the symptoms showing. So that's what happened to me because this friend of mine who was infected with COVID, he didn't have the symptoms initially. And then he just went out, and that's where I met him to play soccer or football. And then I actually contracted it while he was asymptomatic.
Right.
And then the next day, he actually developed symptoms.
Oh, interesting. So you guys are playing football. You think you got it from that? Like, were you like side by side running up and down the field or what?
Well, it's definitely possible because, I mean, the whole time that I was with this person, we were playing football and then we had dinner afterwards.
Okay.
So it could have been either one of those situations.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like he was like sneezing or coughing or anything like that, right? Like it's just normal everyday kind of stuff. So yeah, it really makes you wonder how the transmission is, because like obviously you're not wearing a mask when you're eating, you're not wearing a mask when you're playing football, but if he's not, you know, kind of sneezing or coughing or anything, it's just breathing normally. You wonder, like, is it in the air? Maybe he touched something and you touched something? Or I guess no, scientists don't really know right now.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And it's a huge mystery as of now as to how the whole thing can be contagious. Yeah. And what makes things more confusing is that I actually, after the time I got infected and before I started showing symptoms, I had friends come over to my place. And we actually like shared a meal together.
Oh yeah.
And my friends, the two friends that I had who came over to my place, they were tested negative.
Wow, interesting. So they tested negative, but then you had dinner with your friend, or you played soccer and had dinner, and then you tested positive. So
yeah. Wow. So I'm really confused as to how it goes, but I'm just thankful that none of my I didn't infect anybody.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the whole thing is so strange, isn't it? That's kind of why I wanted to do this interview, because, you know, I haven't talked to anybody who's got COVID, and you see on the news these cases of people dying, people losing their limbs, and other people it's like, sniffles for a few days and they go back to normal. So it just seems so bizarre to me that it could affect people so differently.
Yeah, I mean, I've read that there are different variations of the virus all over the world. And for example, in the US, it's actually a different form of the virus as it is in Japan. And different forms of the virus affect people differently, as well as they have different different impacts on certain parts of the body. So it is really a mystery.
Yeah, no kidding. So when you went to this clinic, I'm curious as to what they did to kind of prepare for you. Were the doctors like in hazmat suits or something? Or like, why did they set that up?
Well, that was what I expected, but surprisingly, no. All they had on were masks and disposable gloves. So, but when I arrived at the clinic, I was told not to immediately go into the clinic. I was told to wait outside and call them so that they could send someone to pick me up. And so when I got there, I called them and said, like, hey, I'm here. What am I supposed to do? So they asked me to wait outside and they sent somebody out to pick me up. And because the clinic's on the third floor, they told me, like, okay, we can't use the elevator. We have to take the stairs. Which is understandable. So I took the stairs up and I was assigned like a separate waiting room for my consultation. So I had an entire room to myself while waiting, instead of being in the general waiting room with everyone else.
Right. Yeah. And what was the actual test from the doctor? Did he actually test you, or did he just ask you what your symptoms were?
Well, the doctor didn't test me. He just asked me what my symptoms were, how long I had been having it, asked me about my contact with this infected person, how long ago was it, so that you can measure the time frame to see if it's possible that I actually had COVID because of this time frame, incubation period for the symptoms to develop. And that was about it.
And then, so once you go to the clinic, then what's the next step?
So once you go to the clinic and the doctor says that, you should take a PCR test, the clinic will contact the government office of the ward that you're living in, and the government office will arrange a time frame for the test for you, and then inform you, and then you're supposed to head to the designated testing area.
And what is that? Is that at a hospital, or is it like a warehouse somewhere, or what?
I'm not sure about other wards, but in my case, it was a hospital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so after I got the slot to get tested for coronavirus, they told me, like, oh, you can't take any public transport to the testing area, so please don't take the train. Please don't take a bus. If you can, cycle there. Wow. And I was like, I don't have a bicycle. What am I supposed to do? And he said, oh, okay, if you can. And I told him it was pretty far because the testing area is like about 5 kilometers away from my place. And they said, you can take a cab if you are having breathing difficulties. If you find it difficult to get there, please take a cab. And I was like, damn, I have to walk 5 kilometers. They're basically asking me to walk like 5 km.
Was this was the test arranged like the next day, or was it a few days later?
It was arranged. No, because I visited the clinic in the evening, so they weren't able to contact the government, the office in the evening. So they had to do it the following day, and apparently they were full up the following day. So I had to do it like the day after.
Okay. And then during that time, do they tell you to stay home, or do they give you any guidelines?
Yeah, they just told me to just not stay go home. Anywhere. Okay. Yeah, because I live alone.
Right.
I didn't pose any issue to any danger to people staying with me. Right. So they said, okay, since you live alone, just stay home. Don't go anywhere. Yeah.
And then during this time, were your symptoms getting worse?
Actually, no, my symptoms were actually getting better.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so
you should call him up. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so my symptoms were getting much, much better, actually. So the day after I visited the clinic, my fever actually went down and I didn't have a headache anymore.
Huh.
But what happened was that I was losing my sense of smell.
Oh, no kidding. Huh.
Yeah, so when I was starting to lose my sense of smell, I didn't even have to wait for the results of the test. I was like, yeah, this is it. I have COVID.
Yeah,
I was pretty sure.
That's a pretty sure symptom, isn't it? That a lot of people reported that they lose their sense of smell.
Yeah. So So it might, like, people always expect it, because when you say the symptom is, oh, you lose your sense of taste, you lose your sense of smell, people expect it to be, like, instant. Like, for example, you wake up one day and, like, hey, I'm not able to smell, I'm not able to taste. Right. But it's actually really gradual. So on the first day I realized that I was starting to lose my sense of smell, it was because I have this air freshener in my room. And I started realizing that smell that was getting really faint. And I was wondering why. And I took out all the condiments from my kitchen to try and smell them.
Oh, really?
I could still smell it, but I realized that it was getting weaker and weaker as the days went by.
Right.
Until the actual time came where I couldn't, like, smell anything at all. Huh. It was totally blocked.
Wow. Yeah. So then you're kind of lucky at this point you didn't have any kind of respiratory issues, right? Because they asked you to walk 5K to the hospital in the Japanese heat, which is just brutal, right? So,
I was kind of lucky. So on the day that I was to get tested and I had to walk the 5 kilometers, it was actually pretty cool.
Oh, was it? Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, it was about 26 degrees. And it was, like, sort of drizzling.
Oh, yeah.
So what turned out, like, really lucky for me was on that day, I didn't have any symptoms other than not being able to smell. I didn't feel unwell.
Right.
So making a walk wasn't that much of a problem for me.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's lucky for you. So you get to the hospital for your PCR test. And what is the test? Is that where they stick that long thing in your nose and swab the back of your throat?
Yeah, that's the one.
Ugh, that looks so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is really uncomfortable, but it's only for less than 10 seconds. So you feel uncomfortable for 10 seconds and then it's over. But you do feel this pain at the back of your nose, like something foreign just went there and it's sort of uncomfortable, but it gets over really quick.
Right. And then how soon after that do you get the results?
So I've heard various reports about the time frame when you get the results. I got my results pretty quick. So I got it on the day itself, a couple hours later.
Oh, yeah.
But whereas for my friends, they did the test on a Friday and then they didn't get the results until Monday.
Wow.
So I think they have a break during the weekends. I'm not too sure. So they don't test people on the weekends,
right,
which is kind of odd.
Right. And,
So I think the time frame varies, but I was lucky that I got the results really quick.
And then obviously your results. So you were just waiting in the hospital the whole time for the results?
No. I went home.
Oh, you went home. Okay. So you walked the 5K back home?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my God. That's a 10K round trip just to get your nose poked.
Yeah.
But then obviously your results came back. I guess what they called you and said it's positive?
Yep. They called me and told me, like, okay, so I received two separate phone calls. One phone call was from the hospital who did the test. And the hospital called me and said, like, okay, you tested positive. We will tell the government office that you have tested positive. And that's about it. Like, that was the end of the conversation.
Right.
And a while later, I received a phone call from the government office to say, like, okay, you have tested positive for coronavirus. So what you have to do is to go into isolation. So we will put up a dedicated facility for you to go into isolation until you have recovered. So
you couldn't stay at home, eh? They wouldn't let you, because you say you live alone. They wouldn't allow you to stay at home?
Yeah, they don't allow you to stay at home because they say, like, oh, because you need food, so you have to go to the convenience store, you have to go to the supermarket, so we can't allow that.
And, huh.
Yeah, okay, fine. I mean, that's reasonable. So they said, like, it just happened in my case, the dedicated facility was a hospital. I heard of other people who have checked into hotels. And I was hoping mine would be a hotel too, because, you know, hotels are comfortable and all. And you sort of have your privacy in a hotel.
Right, right.
But sadly, I didn't get a hotel.
Yeah. Did you get a room to yourself in the hospital?
Yeah, I got a room to myself in the hospital. Like, all coronavirus patients get a room for themselves.
Right, okay.
Because of the whole contagious thing.
Right.
We can't have someone who's recovered still being exposed to, like, coronavirus. Right. So.
So they told you to, what, make your way back to the hospital. But I guess at this point, you don't really know how long you're going to be in the hospital, do you?
Yeah, I don't know. And the people... When the people who called me and said, like, hey, you have to go to the hospital, I asked them, so how long will I be in hospital for? They said, like, we don't know. Just bring your entertainment. bring stuff to do while you're in the hospital. And, yeah, I thought that I was going to be there for a while. So I packed my laptops and some clothes and some toiletries. And I didn't... It was a different hospital from the one that I got tested at.
Right. Did you have to walk to that hospital as well?
No, thankfully, no. I did not have to walk to the hospital. They actually sent sort of like a ambulance to pick me up.
Huh.
So, yeah, that was the following day. So the following day after I got my positive results, I hopped into the ambulance and headed to the hospital. And, yeah, that's when I got warded into the hospital.
So you check into the hospital. At this point, it sounds like your symptoms are actually better than they were before, right?
Yeah. So when I checked into the hospital, I had no symptoms. I felt completely fine.
Other than the fact that you couldn't smell.
Yeah. Other than the fact that I couldn't smell.
I felt fine. So then did your symptoms get worse? Did they come back?
No, they did not come back.
No kidding.
Yeah. They have not come back since, actually. Since then.
So you sat in the hospital this whole time feeling totally fine.
That's right.
Bored out of your mind, I guess.
Yeah, that's
right. Wow, huh.
I was kind of lucky because I managed to get rid of all my symptoms in a span of 5 days.
So you were in the hospital for 5 days. They kept you for 5 days.
Yeah, they kept me there for 5 days. So the whole, based on the whole... What was it called? World Health Organization guidelines.
Yeah.
It's that you, if you 10 days after the onset of your symptoms, with 3 days consecutively without showing any symptoms, then you are sort of recovered. You're classified to have recovered from COVID.
Okay.
So that was what happened to me. So I had symptoms for 5 days, and then on the sixth day I recovered. Which is the day that I went to the hospital, and I stayed there for another 5 days, so that makes a total of 10 days without showing any symptoms. And then I had 5 days in a row without any symptoms as well, so that makes me recovered.
Wow, then, interesting. Huh.
Yeah, so after 5 days, I was able to be discharged from the hospital.
Did your sense of smell come back to you while you were in the hospital?
Yeah, it did. So on the second day I was in the hospital, I realized that I was starting to smell again. And I was really happy because, you know, when you eat, you can taste the food, but you can't smell it.
Yeah,
It's a really, really weird feeling.
Yeah. Wow, that's so strange. So you're one of those people who like had barely any symptoms at all.
Huh. Yeah, I would guess I would say so. So I would say that I was very lucky to not have any life-threatening issues. But actually, when I spoke to the staff at the hospital, they told me like most people don't exhibit life-threatening issues. And most people, when they check in the hospital, they are barely showing any symptoms already.
Really?
Because it takes them such a long time. I mean, it takes about a week to get tested from the onset of symptoms to get tested to eventually get into the isolation ward. So most of the time when people check to the hospital or check to any isolation facilities, they're more or less recovered already.
Wow, that's interesting. When you were in the hospital, did they do any additional testing on you?
Right. So on the day that I went to the hospital, I took a CT scan, an X-ray, urine test, as well as a blood test. And they would share with me the results from all those tests, and they told me like, oh, there's basically nothing to worry about, you your real vitals are fine. Apart from that, I had to take my temperature couple times a day. yeah, apart from that, there wasn't anything particular.
So what did you do like all day? You're stuck in this room, right? You can't leave that room, right? What do you do all day in a hospital room?
Netflix.
Did you watch all those NHK cooking shows?
No, I didn't. Well, they did have a TV in my ward, but I never used it because like one thing, Japanese TV doesn't really appeal to me.
Yeah.
And second, it was all these NHK cooking shows and stuff, you know. And I wasn't really getting great food in the hospital, and I couldn't order like Uber Eats or something, so I was feeling kind of depressed. So I didn't want to watch those.
What were the Japanese the hospital staff like?
Well, I can't make any comparisons because in my life this is the first time I've actually been hospitalized. But they were pretty nice. They try to make like conversation with you because they know that you're isolated, you're alone, and there's possibility that you're feeling kind of sad. So they do come in and like try to talk to you and be like, hey, how are you? Then they talk about the scenery and stuff like that. Well, there wasn't much scenery to begin with, but in my case, they asked me like, oh, how long have you been in Japan? What are you doing in Japan and stuff like that? Yeah.
When they came in, were they all masked up and like wearing suits and all that, like protective suits or just wearing a mask or what?
Yeah, they were all in full protective gear. Face shields, masks, those apron thingies.
Right.
Yeah, they were in complete full protective gear.
Wow.
Which made me feel kind of sad as well because like, hey, I'm like a biohazard material. So, yeah.
And then after 10 days, 5 days in the hospital, they told you you could go home?
Yeah. They told me, okay, because you haven't shown any symptoms, you are compliant with the guidelines that says that we can discharge you. So they told me like, okay, you're free to go. You are discharged.
I'm surprised there's not like a final test or something like that. Like the test is just you're not showing symptoms, but you were barely showing symptoms when you came in. So I'm surprised they didn't do like the nose swab one more time or something like that.
So about the nose swab test, I did a little bit of research on my own and I think it's kind of conclusive that the nose swab test to determine if the person is no longer infected has been rather ineffective.
Oh, okay.
Because based on what I know, you can still test positive because the virus RNA is still inside you.
Right.
It just says the virus is dead. So when they swab your nose, the dead virus goes onto the swab.
Right.
And it still detects it.
Right.
And so when I called the government center to ask if I could get another PCR test to confirm that I'm recovered, they told me like that's not possible. Yeah, so they just follow the symptoms guidelines set by the World Health Organization.
And then so after 5 days, they're like, well, thank you, Yoroshiku, and you can go home no problems then.
Yeah. Huh. And I was kind of expecting them to send me home in their little ambulance, but because I read online that's what they do. So they send you there and then they send you back.
Right.
But no, I had to take the bus back on my own.
Right, right. Wow, interesting. And then what were the total costs of all this for you?
Right, so the only cost that I incurred was the consultation fee at the clinic, which cost me about 2,400 yen. That was all that I incurred.
Wow,
and the PCR tests as well as the hospitalization fees, they were all free.
All covered by the Japanese medical
thing.
Covered
by the Japanese insurance.
Right. Interesting. And then I'm curious, your friend who you got it from, what was his experience like? Did he have like mild symptoms like you or was it different?
Based on what I didn't really ask him about his experience, but from what I've heard, he was held at a hospital. I mean, not a hospital. He was held at a hotel instead of a hospital, and he was he was able to leave the hospital in the same time frame as I did, so 10 days.
So it sounds like he had pretty mild symptoms as well.
Yeah, sounds like it. Either that or he made a pretty fast recovery.
Right, interesting. Wow. So yeah, maybe there's like variations of the virus going around, and you two got like one of the milder ones, and then other people have got a more extreme version.
Yeah, that's definitely possible, as well as I think age plays a factor as well, because I'm in my mid-20s and my friend is just hit 30, I think.
Right.
So we are still both considered pretty young with fairly robust immune systems. So I think that plays a part as well.
That's such a weird illness, isn't it? So much of a mystery, I guess, still for a lot of doctors and scientists that you just don't know. Do you have any residual effects at all?
I cannot classify what is residual because I'm a little paranoid now. So whenever I get like a runny nose or whenever I cough, I always get a bit scared. So I'm not sure if this is residual from the coronavirus or these are just standalone things.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
It's kind of scary, isn't it? Because you kind of read these cases online where people are saying like the virus can affect you, like different organs for like a long time. So I guess right now it'd be a little scary for you, isn't it? Because you don't know like what's going on inside.
Yeah, it definitely is really scary. And I would say like this whole experience, while it didn't affect me physically, it really affected me mentally.
Right.
Like from knowing that you have this virus and like the impact that it has on your life, like the disruption that happens because you're not able to go to work, you're not able to resume your whatever is a new normal even.
Right.
Which is mentally very, very tiring, exhausting. And even after you are out of the hospital and you think you've recovered, any slight things that occur, you just leaves you wondering whether this is residual effects or whether this is going to affect you in the long term.
Right.
It's just very, I would say that's the main concern that I've gathered throughout this whole experience, because it is really tiring, like mentally.
Yeah, I can imagine. And basically your whole experience from the time you kind of first felt some symptoms to the time you got out of the hospital is roughly about 2 weeks?
Let me count the days. So from the onset of my symptoms till now, it has been exactly 2 weeks, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, it's been, today marks the 15th day.
Right. Well, you're pretty lucky, though, to make that recovery just in 2 weeks, you know, because, like, there's cases of people in the hospitals in the States for, like, months and months and months on end, like...
Yeah, and, like, even in Singapore, I've heard of people being in the hospital for a month. So I guess I'm really lucky to be out.
How did your work respond? Because I imagine you contacted your work and said, hey, I won't be coming in for the foreseeable future, right? Like, you don't know when you're actually going to be able to go back. What was their response?
Right, so I contacted my workplace and say from the time I hadn't gotten the test yet, so on the third day that I was showing symptoms, I actually told my workplace. I told my boss and said like, "Hey, I might have coronavirus. I'm gonna get tested," and then they gave me like days off because they said like, "Okay, you're not feeling well, right?" and so we'll give you days off. Just keep us updated on the whole testing and what's going to happen. So they were pretty supportive. I'm very thankful for that. My workplace, my bosses, people around me, my colleagues, they were really supportive of throughout the whole experience. And I thankfully I didn't have to work while I was in the hospital. I mean, it was already sad enough that I was in the hospital feeling completely fine in the hospital, but they didn't make it worse work. So
but what a strange experience that you had. In many ways, I mean, obviously it's unfortunate that you got it, but in many ways you're kind of lucky that you seem to have gotten a relatively mild case of it, that you're able to recover so quickly.
I would definitely say that I was really lucky to not be in any life-threatening position. But then again, I was pretty unlucky to have caught the virus in the first place, because it was actually my first time leaving my house in a couple of months.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, so because, you know, you stay at home for so long and you feel like really sluggish, and
yeah,
because you can't get any like good forms of exercise in. So I was thinking, like, hey, why not I just go exercise for once? And so I went to play some football, and ta-da, coronavirus. So
yeah, I was waiting for you.
Yeah, I cannot have been unluckier in that aspect, but yeah, just thankful that I wasn't put in any dangerous situation.
Yeah. How do you feel now then about like going around Tokyo, going about your life? Like, are you worried about, I don't know if you can catch it again or not. Are you staying at home or what are you doing now?
Well, because I feel kind of unsure about the whole guidelines thing, about the whether I'm still contagious or not. So I'm staying home for the time being. I haven't left my house since I got out of the hospital, actually. But I'm staying home till I hit about another week at home, I guess, before I decide that I should go out again.
Right.
But other than that, I have gained a newfound appreciation for even being at home and having this freedom to go wherever I want. But yeah, it's nothing much has changed since then.
Yeah, I guess once you have that mobility kind of taken away from you, because, you know, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Like, we hear that the virus is everywhere. It's on the news everywhere. We see these numbers, millions and millions and millions of people. But I guess you never really anticipated that you would get it. What did you?
No, I didn't. I mean, I've lived through the SARS pandemic. I've had like the H1N1 pandemic, the swine flu pandemic. I've seen all of this, and I didn't get any of them. So I guess like there was a bit of complacency in that aspect, which I kind of regret now.
Right.
Because, I never saw it coming. It's kind of like human nature, because you see all these things happen in the news and you always think like, oh, it's not going to happen to me. It's not going to happen. But when it actually does and you realize how vulnerable you are to these kind of things, you sort of think twice about what you're going to do in the future.
So thanks again to Tom for coming on the show and giving us an update on his situation. I'm really glad to hear that his situation wasn't as serious as some of the other people that have had it. It's such a strange illness, isn't it? Because who's that famous Broadway actor, director guy in the States? I don't know who he is, but I've kind of been following like his wife's postings on Instagram. It's just such a heartbreaking story. Like, the guy went into the hospital for COVID, then he went into a coma, then he recovered, then he had to have his leg amputated, then he went back into a coma, then he recovered, and then eventually passed away. Like, his wife was documenting this all on Instagram. It's just so heartbreaking. I think they have a young child too. Like, this guy was in his 40s. So, and then you hear cases like my friend who was just like, yeah, he had the sniffles for a few days and like he was practically fine by the time he went to the hospital. So it's just so strange how it seems to affect people differently. I really hope that the scientists and doctors and whoever else is working on this is able to kind of figure out what's going on quickly, because it just seems like such a scary, it's strange, it's such a scary issue. It could either kill you or give you like the sniffles for a couple of days, right? Like, that's quite a range there that this virus is choosing to do, you know? So, and also too, is like, you know, it was spooky. Like, for me, when I flew back to Canada, man, was it ever weird. Like, the airport, it's kind of funny actually, the airport was totally empty, you know, like, I've never seen 90th airport that empty, right? So I get to the counter to book Air Canada, to like check into my Air Canada flight, and the counter lady, and they have this little brochure there, says like, would you like to upgrade to premium economy? And You know, usually, actually, when I fly, I prefer to upgrade to premium economy if it's available, just because I don't really like flying long distance and I get kind of uncomfortable. It's never really a comfortable flight for me. So if they're upgrade reasonable, our costs are fairly reasonable, I usually go for it. So I asked her, I said, hey, you guys have this premium economy? And she said, yeah, it's only Niman Yen. I was like, wow, it's only $200. That's pretty cheap. Because normally from Vancouver to Canada, or sorry, from Tokyo to Vancouver is about $500 for upgrade. So this was only like $200. I'm like, yeah, sign me up for that. She's sweet. And she said, it's great. You're the only person in premium economy. I thought, oh, fantastic. You know, like got the whole row to myself. I'll lay down. So I get on the plane and wrong. Premium economy on Air Canada has got these kind of like semi-luxury seats. So it's not as nice as business class, but they're not as small as like economy. They're a little bit larger and they recline a bit more. But there's like a hard armrest between every seat. So you can't actually like lift the armrest and lie down completely, you know? And so the funny thing is like I look behind me in economy and like the whole economy section is empty. There's like 20 people in there and the people are like moving to like the middle row, lifting up all the armrests and just lying down across the whole row. And here I am in like premium economy and I've actually got like smaller seating than they do and I paid more for it. So dumb. But and then the irony is in premium economy, usually you get the meal from first class. And that's another reason why I usually buy it, because I like getting the first class meals, right? So you usually get that. But now Air Canada, I guess, obviously because of the COVID, they've kind of scrapped their meal service and they basically just hand out these like prepackaged sandwiches to everybody from like business class all the way down to economy. Everyone gets the same like cold lunch thingy, which was just horrible. So I spent like all this money to upgrade it and just had the same experience as everyone else. So funny. But anyways, yeah, it was just so spooky to see the airport like completely empty like that. And the plane had like maybe 20 people on it. So I don't like, I shouldn't imagine like the travel industry must just be taking a huge hit. Obviously it affected the business that I was involved in, but I mean, we're just a tiny startup, but I can imagine like the airlines, cruise ship, hotels, like no one's traveling right now. So they must be all in a panic to figure out how to navigate this new deal, you know, so who knows what's going to happen. But I really hope for everyone's sake that a vaccine or some kind of solution is found quickly so that everyone can somewhat get back to a normal life. But anyways, that's it. That wraps up this episode of the Tokyo Podcast from my quarantine room in Canada. Thanks for listening, everybody. My name is Anthony Joe, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.